This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's check in with our old buddy Greg Palast, the investigative journalist, author, filmmaker, his most recent, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. You can watch it over on Amazon. GregPalast.com, of course, is his website. You can tweet him at Greg_Palast. Greg, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be with you again, Tom.
It's always great having you, Greg. I understand that you are suing Ohio and Kansas. Tell me about this.
And 23 other states. But we start with Ohio and Kansas. If you remember last time we spoke, we had a decision by the Supreme Court in a case of Ohio removing 500,000 voters because it was triggered by the fact they didn't vote or they were on our what we call the cross-check list. In other words, the state had evidence that 500,000 people had moved in 2012 from the state. It's one of the big reasons Donald Trump won Ohio by removing the voters that they didn't like. Well, usually the Supreme Court is the final word on these issues, but in this case it really isn't, because the court said as a matter of law, Ohio can remove people who don't return a postcard. They took sending you a postcard as proof you've moved. By the way, Tom, usually when the postcard comes back, addressee unknown or something, that's usually the evidence you've moved, not when it's successfully delivered. It usually means you're there. But they removed people because the list was overwhelmingly young voters, poor voters, voters of color. So what we've done is something very simple. We are suing, on a matter of fact, whether these people who have been targeted in Ohio, and a big chunk of the list was provided Ohio by, guess whom? Kris Kobach of Kansas, Trump's vote thief in chief, now running for governor. And the suit simply says, we want all the names of the people who have been purged. By the way, Ohio has given us those now. And we want who got postcards, who returned them, etc. Because it's very easy to find out if someone actually moved, whether they returned a postcard or not. It's knock on their door and say, are you still here? And in fact, I did that. Donald Alexander Webster of Dayton, Ohio, who's on the list, supposed to get a postcard. He says he never received it. Probably, you know, it looks like junk mail. He'd throw it out. Donald Alexander Webster was told he had moved to Virginia to register as Donald Eugene Webster. He says he's never been to Virginia, and he's never been a Eugene. And there he was, the voter who supposedly moved. We believe that this is the case with the vast majority of those voters who were removed there, being removed in Kansas. And by the way, one thing that has not been mentioned in the media, being removed in at least 24 other GOP-controlled states. We've asked them all for their purge lists, all for their postcards, all for the information. If we can prove that the postcard is not a, quote, reasonable method of determining whether someone's moved, usually used, you know, change of address forms from the post office. If the postcard not being returned is not reasonable, they can't enforce the Supreme Court decision. It won't stand.
Wow. So, interesting. So how did, you know, lawsuits are not cheap, Greg. Are you crowdfunding this thing or, you know? Are you doing
exactly.
It in an alliance with other people? What's going on?
You betcha. Number one, in Kansas, we've teamed up with the ACLU of Kansas, the busiest ACLU in America, fighting Kris Kobach on 11 fronts. They have filed parallel demands for all the lists that are working with us, ACLU of Kansas. In Ohio, the great Bob Fitrakis, the lawyer, the voting rights lawyer, yeah. And in Georgia, we're working with what was originally an organization founded by Stacey Abrams. She knows that her election depends on all people of all colors being able to vote. Then she wins. And in Illinois, where I think we stand a good chance of winning, the Reverend Jesse Jackson is my co-plaintiff. Now, we are, and I want to thank the firm of Jeannie Meyer Mazzocchi, a major plaintiff's law firm, which is taking on the case in all 25 states.
Wow.
As he is a plaintiff, and no charge to the Palast Investigative Fund. However, I will admit there's a whole lot of cost in doing two things, in bringing the case, in analyzing the data, in which, in another life, I was a litigation expert doing this work and investigations. And so we are crowdsourcing it at GregPalast.com, the Palast Investigative Fund, a not-for-profit, nonpartisan operation. That's my last commercial ever on that. And And, you know, and so we are, and then we'll be working with activist groups throughout the nation in each of these states, and we're getting people in Arizona and Tennessee and elsewhere. Please contact gregpalace.com. If you want to be a plaintiff, if you want to participate, we can beat them, but it's going to be done door by door, case by case, until we show that these lists are just racist purge sheets aimed at bleaching the voter rolls whiter than white.
Yeah, which is, you know, so insanely obvious that this is what's been going on, and it's been going on for, you know, decades now. And it needs to be put
to an end.
It
just accelerated. Yeah, Kobach has kind of, you know, energized it, put it into cyberspace. He's helping all these states with the computer power. And we know that behind Kobach, of course, he's Wichita, Kansas, and that's the Koch money, which we were able to directly trace. This whole cabal, this idea that, and he's using the cross-check list saying people have voted twice, but he told me that the real reason, and he admitted to me, he said the real reason is to tell states these people have moved. No, they haven't. Donald Alexander Webster is there at home in Dayton, Ohio. We went through name after name after name. We've talked to people. We went to their homes. Even when they weren't home, their names are still on the mailbox. They're there. They're at work. You know, this is not about people moving. This is about people being moved off the voter rolls illegally. And the people who don't return the postcards, like students who just moved dorm rooms, poor people who've moved within an apartment building or down the street, and they're losing their vote. White, older suburbanites with homes, you know, that they've had for 20 years, they return the cards. They know how that system works. Half the people on the list are just are so clearly bogus when you look at the list of, you know, people that they've sent postcards to. So we're getting all the information. We are suing because they're stonewalling us, the worst being Kobach himself, who won't give us any information whatsoever. But the information, Oklahoma has turned over all their information to us, and it's sickening to see the people that they've removed. People who just moved into the state, registered, and they say, oh, well, you didn't unregister in your other state, so you lose your right to vote. So we're doing this purge by postcard, cost 500,000 votes in the single swing state of Ohio. Figure, well, I'm trying to estimate, but several million nationwide if this is allowed to stand without challenge. So we're challenging it.
Yeah. Good on you, Greg. We're talking to Greg Palace, the investigative journalist, author, filmmaker. His most recent, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, gregpalace.com. Tweet Greg_Palace. You know, Greg, that's pretty comprehensive. Do you think that, what are the chances that you will have some success before the elections in November and that you can actually get some of these people back on the voter rolls? Are there even mechanisms to do that?
Yes, actually pretty good. Now, I won't say everywhere. One thing that happens when we tell these people to give us their lists, show us their procedures, is they start panicking and get out of the Kobach and Husted, that's the guy from Ohio, get out of their purge program. Kentucky dropped out. Washington State, which is Republican Secretary of State, dropped out. We have a lot of people who are not going to use this program. We're not going to be purging by postcard. I think once we expose it, we're going to actually do, you know, part of the reason we're raising funds is to do the publicity so I can get out there and make and do reports for Tom Hartman out in Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin and the other states where purge by postcard is a terrible disease, and see if we can push them off these programs even without having to go to court.
Great. Good and important work you're doing, as always. Greg Palace, keep up the great work, my friend.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. Greg Palace, you can find all the information at GregPalast, PALAST.com. You can tweet him at Greg_Palace. Spread the word. You know, this is what Greg is up to now, and it's a fine thing. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Exposing the con in conservative. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Let's see here. Free Speech TV. There's Larry in Broken Bow, Oklahoma. Hey, Larry. Just heard your state mentioned.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm well.
Hey, good to hear from you, Tom. Hey, just had a question for you. My wife actually brought it up. How could we absolutely get a national referendum for a vote on the border wall? attached, say, to this fall's election?
There's no provision in the Constitution, Larry, for national referendum. Referenda.
Is that right?
Only about half the states' constitutions even allow it, and those were mostly states that became states after the 1880s. Political corruption was so rampant that states built the ballot initiative opportunities into their constitutions specifically to deal with political corruption. But although the process now, you know, the Kochs have taught us how to corrupt that process, and so the process itself has become corrupted. But on a national level, there is no mechanism for that. The only mechanism that you could call a national referendum would be, either voting a particular political party into or out of office in the House, the Senate, or a person in the White House. That's it.
I see. Well, I just thought it might take away the power from the politicians and also take the pressure off of them.
You would think.
Like that was possible.
Yeah, you would think. There's a number of things that I think if they were subject to national referenda, you know, strengthening Medicare, strengthening Social Security, college education, tuition free, these are no-brainers, and they would definitely pass. But, you know, both political parties and the donors for both political parties have a big interest in keeping things the way they are. And therefore
Absolutely.
The problem. Thanks a lot for the call, Larry. Good talking with you. Appreciate it. Irene in Lake Worth, Florida. Hey, Irene, what's on your mind?
Yes. Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm great. What's up?
Good. Well, I know that we have a lot of problems in our country, especially now. But to me, the biggest problem that we have is with this evil Trump administration. And my question to you is, the last that I understood, kidnapping, child abuse, you know, keeping people imprisoned that truly don't belong in prison. To me, this is all a criminal offense, especially the kidnapping and the child abuse part of it. So why is it that Trump and Jeff Sessions, why is it that this administration is not being criminally charged for anything?
Because they're doing it under color of law. Now, it is possible to prosecute people for abuse of that process. For example, there was a town in Florida, I think maybe it was Jupiter, Florida. There was a town in Florida that was in the news a couple months ago because I shouldn't say it was Jupiter. I don't remember specifically, but it was in the news because the local sheriff was, like what happened with Sandra Bland. The local sheriff was busting particularly people of color for things that white people were not being busted for. But that, you know, because there's all this latitude in the law. For example, if you're driving with a broken taillight, the law does provide for you to go to jail for that, even though it's a misdemeanor. You know, most misdemeanors are anything from a $25 fine to a year in jail or 6 months in jail or 2 years in jail is typically the maximum for a misdemeanor. So it does provide for the possibility of imprisonment. What that town or that sheriff was doing was using the most extreme punishments of the law against people of color and the weakest punishments of the law against white people. And that's, you know, basically a form of misuse of office under the color of law. And I think that if there is a federal law that prohibits that, and I'm quite sure that there must be, that conceivably this administration could be prosecuted, but the prosecution would have to, if it wasn't an impeachment prosecution, would have to come out of the Department of Justice, Jeff Sessions. And I don't think that's going to happen. Irene, thanks for the call. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you 20 minutes before the hour. JC in San Francisco. Hey, JC, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a personal story. I work with a gentleman in restaurants and hotels, his name is Ernest, and he's from Guatemala City. And when Ernest turned 16, he was working in a T-shirt factory with his 14-year-old sister and his mother, selling Made in USA labels in the T-shirts. And when he turned 16, the Guatemalan army came knocking on his door, telling him he had to come fight, or they would kill him. So he packed up the next morning and left for the United States and applied for refugee status when he came to the border. And by the time he was an adult, he became a U.S. citizen, and he's a hardworking, speaks excellent English, and productive member of society without any problems attached to all the struggle. And a personal story that I try and share with people who you know, may not have heard of it, which is pretty much everybody I've ever told. So
it's a heartwarming story, JC. Here's the catch. The Trump administration has just announced, this was day before yesterday, that they are now going to go back and look at the citizenship applications of people like your friend from Guatemala City. And if he cannot once again prove that he had legitimate and real fear for his life, and he may well have lost the documentation, it may have been destroyed, the standards may be much stricter now than they were then. If he cannot prove that, they're going to revoke his citizenship and deport him. Even guys who are U.S. citizens right now. Brand new policy from the Trumpies.
Both my parents are naturalized European descent citizens, and they both hang on to their citizenships, you know, close to their vests, because they said that's always a looming possibility.
Yeah.
My mother's from Nazi-occupied Denmark. My father was born in Canada, raised in the city of Portland. When he was returning from his job on Vancouver Island in 1942, they said you couldn't come back into the country because you're not a citizen. And he didn't bring his Merchant Marine papers with him, which had him listed as a British citizen. And he spent 6 months in Vancouver living on 50 cents a day, having Senator Wayne Morris from your state worked the background. He was, I believe, a state legislator back then, worked in the background and helping him to get back into the country.
Wow.
But, a lot of this shenanigans, you know, keeps coming back to haunt people. But my father spent 50 years in the medical practice and successful, member of state California, medicine. And my mother, you know, she's a fantastic lady, and she was also a very successful participant in this country, and she's still alive.
Yeah, yeah. It's, the story of your parents and of this fellow from Guatemala, they're wonderful stories. I'm telling you, though, that the Trump and Pence and America's most racist Keebler elf are all coming after anybody whose skin is not white and did not come from Europe. They are coming after these folks.
They want to keep the distraction going. That's why.
Oh, it's not just that. What they're trying to do is turn back the Browning of America. That's what's going on. They're trying to keep, by 2045, you're going to have a majority of Americans who are eligible to vote not be white people in about 25
both
years.
My parents are Northern Europeans, so they're very pale skinned.
Yeah. So they're probably going to be fine, but if there's any melanin in their skin, they're going to be, get ready. It's coming. JC, thanks for the call. Catherine in Burlington, Vermont. Hey, Catherine, what's up?
Yes, hi, Tom. I was wondering about, I want your opinion. Do you have a plan in your mind for how we would balance having these people coming in who are desperate and fleeing for their lives? Do you have a plan for them where they can go? Because they come in and there are people here who are working their asses off, and they're in their own hell, and they've been in this country and they've been giving to this country the whole time, and they're in a sense working, fleeing for their lives too, in a way.
No, I get it. The workers, the work, you know, if what you're saying, Catherine, is that these people are competing for jobs, there is some truth to that, a small amount of truth, but there is some truth to that. And the simple reality is that the working people of America, setting aside the whole immigration crisis, the working people of America have been making less money every year since Ronald Reagan became president.
Right.
Wages are completely, not just flat, but minus. It takes two point two people now to earn as much money as it took one person to earn in 1968 to support a family. That has nothing to do with immigration. That is entirely the destruction of unions, the freezing of the minimum wage laws, and the activities of the Republicans. But that said, you asked me if I have a solution, and I do. And what I'm telling you is the number of people who are coming here because they're looking for a job, and I said this in the last hour, I'll say it again, the number of people like my niece's husband who came here looking for a job and ended up getting deported back to Mexico, that group of people has gone negative. More people are leaving the United States who are looking for jobs than coming to the United States. That's not an issue. What we're talking about are people who are fleeing violence in El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Guatemala specifically, and Honduras. And the reason they're fleeing violence in those countries, and not in Costa Rica, which is right in that proximity, is because Costa Rica provides free health care, free college education to anybody in their country, instead of having a military. Whereas these other countries go back to the Ronald Reagan administration, go back to what Ollie North was doing, the whole, you know, Iran-Contra, the whole, you know, smuggling drugs in exchange for weapons, supporting right-wing regimes, trying to take down Daniel Ortega, then corrupting Ortega. He's turned into a right-wing crackpot, used to be a left-wing crackpot. I mean, all this stuff, we messed in these countries, we broke these countries. Costa Rica successfully said to us, no, we're not going to let you mess in our country. They survived it. So my solution, Catherine, is to fix these countries.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Which could cost a fraction of the hell that we're going through right now with all this immigration stuff. So, breaking news. Back in 1997... An immigrant by the name of Flores sued, saying that their child could not be held in detention for more than 20 days to do so without, you know, being charged with a crime specifically, that to do so would be a violation of the Constitution's Due Process Clause and the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th Amendments of the Constitution. And the courts agreed in what's called the Flores Consent Decree or the Flores Settlement. The courts ruled that you cannot keep children in detention more than 20 days without a specific, like, conviction, right? So Donald Trump is taking money from, and the Republican Party is taking money from, I don't know if Trump is personally taking money from, but I know some of his donors are very big investors in these private prison companies. And the private prison companies are taking billions of your and my taxpayer dollars to house these kids, in many cases, at the cost of as much as $700 or $800 a day. Right, you could put them in the Ritz-Carlton for less than this. And those donors do not want to lose those customers, those kids. They want to make sure that the gravy train, the multi-billion dollar gravy train, continues. So as I just tweeted, and if you want to grab it and retweet it, I think it's a. I was retweeting the story from Democracy Now. I'm reading the same thing in the New York Times today. President Trump is preparing to issue an executive order as soon as Wednesday, that would be today, that ends the separation of families at the border by indefinitely detaining parents and children together. So he's going to sign an executive order that will violate the Flores settlement, the consent decree, so these kids can be kept in detention for more than 20 days. So the private prison donors to the Republican Party are going to get their billions, and he's hoping this will calm the firestorm while still having already successfully shouted out to his right-wing, white, right-wing racist base, look at what we're doing to prevent this country from getting any browner, because that's what this is all about. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, what's up?
Hi. I was watching Greg Palance earlier. And I don't know if he's aware of it or not, but here in Alabama, we managed to get almost 800,000 people registered to vote in the past 18 months when we were trying to get Doug Jones elected. 660,000 of those were online. And now our Secretary of State made an announcement on the news with a whole bunch of white men sitting around a table that they are now going to work on voter registration, and they're running a cross-check against driver's license trying to find people who are not registered to vote. And my question is, specifically, who are they looking for that's not registered to vote?
Well, that's weird.
Yes, very weird. Because if we have managed to raise the number of people in the state who are registered to vote from about 1.5 million to now closer to 3.5 million, and he is looking for people who are not registered to vote, what specific demographic is he looking for?
Well, wealthy white people.
Yes.
And okay. I get it now. I've been trying to figure out what the hell is going on. Why are the Republicans trying to increase the voter rolls? Oh, they're going to target white people. They want to get more white people voting.
Yeah, so if there's a brown person with a legal driver's license who is not registered to vote, will they get one of these postcards?
Right. Right. Well, they may well, but the fact of the matter is white people as a percentage of the, you know, of their population are more likely to own a car than brown people or black people.
Yes. But also in our primary, we, the Democratic side, we got outvoted 3-1. The number of people who turned out to vote for the Republican side outvoted the Democratic side 3-1. And so I don't know what's going to happen in November if people don't show up to vote.
Yeah. Amen. I mean, that might have been just the nature of the election. Sometimes if you get a really wild election going on one side and not so much on the other, that has to do with it. But, yeah. You know, you're also in a state that has probably a majority of Republicans, don't you think, Norma?
Yeah. Can I ask you one more question real quick?
Mm-hmm.
Why hasn't our State Department reached out to Guatemala to see what can be done to stop these immigrants?
Because what's happening, that's a great question, Norman. Thank you for asking that. What is happening in Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua is exactly what these guys have planned for the United States.
Yes.
I strongly recommend you read Nancy McLean's book, Democracy in Chains. In the last chapter of that book, she talks about how the grand plan that the right-wing billionaires, and she specifically names Charles Koch, but I think it's much broader than that, but the grand plan of these libertarian ideologues is to have absolute, quote, economic liberty. In other words, the ruling class rules. There's no more democracy.
Yeah.
There's no more we the people. And the, literally to start moving working class people into favelas, into slums, into massive slums, back to huge slums for the United States. That if you did not, if you're old and broken poor, you didn't plan right for your old age. If you're working class and you can't make a living, you should have been born into a richer family, or you should have studied better. It's all, you know, in their universe, if you have any kind of economic problem, it's your own fault. And keep in mind, you know, Charles Koch inherited his money from his daddy, just like Donald Trump did. But these billionaires, these trust fund babies, have decided that all the rest of us are the takers and they're the makers, and they want a country just for the makers. And that's what we did. We introduced neoliberalism into these countries in the South as a bulwark against socialism. And at the same time that, you know, Hugo Chavez and Fidel Castro were promoting communism and socialism in the South, those governments that were in the moderate middle, you know, the equivalents of Costa Rica, the guy, you know, what you had in Argentina, what you had in Chile, what you had in Brazil, the kind of moderate middle, they went after them too. You know, they didn't want labor unions. They did not want free education. They did not want a national health care system. They were afraid that these things would ultimately come to the United States. And so they tore down these governments. They facilitated the destruction of these governments, the corruption within these governments. It was big, big, big during the Reagan administration. It was called Iran-Contra. The Contra part of it was Honduras and Nicaragua. We broke these countries intentionally to prove that the economies would end up better, right? And to destroy the unions and to destroy any idea that socialism, and I mean like as in democratic socialism, could actually work. And
yeah,
what they've done is they've proved the opposite. Costa Rica now is a very successful country, and it's largely a democratic socialist country. It's kind of like Northern Europe and Central America. All the rest of these countries have become hellholes because of our economic policies.
You're correct. And something that white people are not thinking about is once you get rid of all the brown people, you attack the black people. They're trying to get rid of the reservations so they can attack the red people. The only people that will be left to attack will be poor white people, and they can't see it coming.
Well, and they're going after the poor white people right now, too. You know, if you want to get on Medicaid in West Virginia, pretty soon you're going to have to pee in a cup. Norma, thank you for the call. Very well said. Michael in Snohomish, Washington. Hey, Michael, thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Yeah. I was wondering if these perpetrators of Trump's evil on the border, stealing children, are they going to be held accountable? Or are they going to get off by saying, I was just following orders?
Well, that's been Kirstjen Nielsen's absolute defense. And Nate, you've got the clip, right? This is when we lived in Washington, D.C., our studios were on 14th Street. And right down the street, like six blocks down from our studio on 14th Street, between G and F, is a, I don't think it's a Jose Andres. I think it's a another celebrity chef hotel, but it's called MXDC. It's a Mexican restaurant. And yesterday, Kirstjen Nielsen, the Secretary of Homeland Security, decided to have a nice dinner with an attractive man about her age, it looks like. Called a working dinner. In other words, you and I probably picked up the tab for it at MXDC. And the irony of this woman eating dinner at a Mexican restaurant is pretty rich. But then the Democratic Socialists chapter of Washington, D.C. showed up, and here's what happened. These people are standing around her table as she's eating at the restaurant. This went on for 10 minutes. And the video, you can find the video all over the internet. So they may not get prosecuted, Michael. They may not get perp walked, but they're going to have a heck of a hard time eating out. You know, I mean, this is an increasing problem. More and more Republicans are going to super high-end places, places that, you know, do not allow you in without a reservation, private clubs. There's a few of them in Washington, D.C., or they're just hanging out in their own little, you know, in the Senate dining room kind of thing. So in fact, this is probably why Scott Pruitt, you know, they asked him, the White House specifically asked him to stop having lunch every day at the White House in the White House dining room right next to the Situation Room. It's reserved for the president and his friends. Scott Pruitt have been eating there every day, probably because wherever he goes in the city, he gets evil looks from people. I mean, that's why he doesn't want to fly coach anymore. So did I answer your question, Michael?
Yeah, I guess it's the conservatives think their worldview is us and them, and I, as a liberal, think we.
Yeah. Well, that's the simple difference. Michael Moore said that so elegantly in one of his movies. I think it might have been Bowling for Columbine or Sicko, where he said, you know, you have a choice. You know, you can have a we society or a me society. This country was founded on the principles of a we society. There's certainly a fairly me, you know, white men group there, but the principles of a we society, and we've become more and more a we society over the years. But you're absolutely right, Michael. These white racist right wingers want to take us to a total me society. These libertarians, these right wing billionaires, it's all about the makers, to hell with the takers, right? That's their shtick. That's their pitch.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's 45 minutes past the hour. We're going to check in with Talk Media News in 4 minutes, and we'll continue with more of the news of the day and your calls. We're going to check in with the Aiden sisters as well. And welcome back. Oh, my. Let's see here. Alex in Bloomington, Indiana, watching us on YouTube. Hey, Alex, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, thanks for picking up my call. I'm proudly calling from the great state of Mike Pence. I mean that sarcastically.
Yeah, Indiana.
Have you ever read Gaddafi's Green Book?
I've not. I had a copy of it at one time, but I've never read it. Why?
Yeah, it's only 100 pages long.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm only 21 years old, so all my life I've been propagandized about all these leaders throughout the world. And, you know, he wrote this in the 70s when he was a revolutionary, came from a poor Bedouin family. And he talks about direct democracy and really attacks parliamentary systems and representative democracies. And he essentially calls them dictatorships.
Right.
You know, obviously, he eventually became a dictator himself. But have you ever thought about direct democracy?
This was one of the things that was debated at some considerable length at the Constitutional Convention in August and September of 1787 in Philadelphia.
Right.
And you know, the old direct democracy, and in fact, I refer you to Socrates and Plato's, or Aristotle and Plato, no, Socrates and Plato's, I'm mixing them up. Yeah, Plato's comments on direct democracy anyway.
Okay.
That back in that time in Greece, this is where our word idiot came from. Basically, everybody, you had to have 6,001 people to have a quorum in order to pass legislation in Greece. You were one of those 6,000 people by lot. Your name was drawn. Every year there was a giant lottery. They drew 6,000 and you know, 6,500 names or whatever, and 6,001 people had to show up. And it was like jury duty, and you did it for a year. And the people who didn't show up were called the idiota.
Because he says that if you don't participate in politics, then you get ruled by your inferiors.
Correct? That's correct, yeah. But the problem was that the system itself became corrupted, even in ancient Greece, as Plato pointed out, and as I believe both Socrates and Aristotle, two philosophers that in terms of time and who they were and what they did, I constantly mix up in my brain, I'm sorry, remnants of high school, history. But all of them were skeptical of direct democracy. And, there are significant problems with direct democracy. On the other hand, you have, autocracy. And so what the founders of this republic tried to do is walk this middle line where the body that would have the greatest power, the only body that had the power to appropriate money or to raise taxes or spend money, was the House of Representatives, which is elected every 2 years in the smallest political districts, the smallest political units in the United States, so that you could get as close to a representative direct democracy as possible. And, in states like California, where they have nonpartisan commissions putting, undoing gerrymanders and drawing district lines, it actually seems to be working. The problem is that the system was gamed first to keep out people of color and women, and then, and now it's being gamed again to keep out people of color and women and young people.
Greg Palast talked about that very beautifully. I love when you have him on the show because he knows his stuff.
Yeah, he absolutely does. Alex, I gotta run, but thanks for the call and keep up the research. Right, there's a lot of raw material there for you to dig into. We'll be back with Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News right after this. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. On the line with us, Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News. This report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Ellen's new book, Loving What You Do. Hey, Ellen.
Well, hello. I'm going to start out easy, which is Fox and Disney have a new deal. It's going to be $28 a share. It's gone up to $38 a share, and it wipes out Comcast's bid. Now, it does not include the news channel. It means mainly their production facilities and their movies and that kind of thing. So that's what will be part of that deal.
But Fox News is going to continue to be run by Rupert Murdoch and be programmed of, by, and for the billionaire class, as far as I can tell.
Well, okay. I work for them, so I got to be...
Okay, I get it.
All right. Now, okay, this is really interesting. There was all of this. I mean, tons of different viewpoints. Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, weighed in on this in terms of keeping families together. Well, all of a sudden, this morning, just about an hour ago, Donald Trump said that he was going to sign something that would keep families together. Then he canceled the congressional picnic, which was, they used to have a congressional picnic and then the night or two afterwards they'd have a press picnic. Well, that went away under President Bush, never got revised under President Obama. But now it's interesting that the congressional picnic is going to go away. At this point, we don't know when it's going to be reconstituted or if it's going to be reconstituted. But we do know that the president is going to sign something to keep families together.
There's a very important caveat, though.
There's
a very important caveat in that. In 1997, there was a lawsuit by, I believe it was a woman named Flores, that her child could not be kept indefinitely in detention by ICE, basically.
Called the Flores settlement, absolutely correct.
That's correct. And so the courts limited it to 20 days, which means that these contractors down in Florida who are Republican-connected and, big GOP donors who are getting over $1 billion a month for caring for these kids, $700 a night for some of these children, these contractors, after 20 days, lose their money. So Trump is signing an executive order that says, according to the New York Times today, that it will, A, allow families to be detained together, but B, for an indefinite amount of time.
Definite period of time, that's correct.
So his donors, his major Republican donors among the private prison companies are getting what they want out of this.
Well, it's very interesting. The Republicans have been able to say, oh, well, listen, Bush and Obama held people. They did, but they did hold families together. And when people got deported, their kids went with them.
Right.
And now kids aren't going with them in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
They're, as you say, going to stay under this prison system, which makes some few people very rich.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, now the Office of Refugee Resettlement is in Michigan, and there's one in Michigan, there's one in every state, says the children who are sent to them are getting younger and younger, and some of them are just a few months old, and they're very, very concerned about that because, you know, some of these kids are being breastfed, some of these kids have no other alternatives, they don't know anybody who's not their mother, et cetera, and they are very, very concerned about that. So we have that going on at the same time.
Right.
Also, the United States yesterday withdrew from the United Nations Human Rights Council. It has less than 50 people, I think 47 or 48 people, countries involved. There's 193 countries in the United Nations. And basically, they're saying, well, okay, Israel is bad, but so is Venezuela and Turkey and other countries, Iran, and none of those people are ever faulted, which is true, actually. I have to say, the United Nations is not faulting those people, and that's a big problem for sure.
Yeah, I get that. Although the irony of pulling out of the Human Rights Council the day that, you know, that we're doing this to children on our southern border is pretty rich.
Oh, for sure. Well, we don't know whether Nikki Haley initiated this on her own or whether she was directed by Donald Trump. That's what we don't know.
Oh, I suspect it was directed by the ambassador from Israel to the United States. I mean, we did this on behalf of Israel.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, there's no question about that. And
yeah.
I don't know whether Israel is part of that Human Rights Council or not. I didn't look it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or maybe it was Shelley Adelson who made the order.
Oh, I was at a restaurant and met him in Florida right before, I guess maybe it was in Florida or North Carolina. I guess it was Florida before the convention.
Mm.
And I was like shocked. There was Adelson sitting at the next table.
Wow.
Go figure. He's married to a female doctor, by the way.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Okay. Now, also, there is a report out today that says the opioid crisis is putting more children in foster care in the United States. So, in other words, these courts say, okay, you can't handle your kids, you're opioid addicted, and they are separating kids from their parents. Now, some of the parents are abusive, some of the parents should not be addicted, et cetera.
And some of the parents
are
dead.
I'm sorry?
And some of the parents are dead. I mean, we've got a major overdose problem, too.
Some of the parents are dead, for sure, yes.
Yeah,
but
okay.
What we don't know is why there's more children in foster care, but we do know there's more for kids in foster care.
Yeah.
And what is really going to drive me crazy, stop the clock is right twice a day. The U.S. Has trade policy on China, and they had a conference call yesterday with reporters, which I was on, and then late last night they issued a report. And what they said, and you know, I have to say, they're correct on China.
Quick, Ellen.
Even though I'm not sure I agree with everything.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. Ellen Ratner with Talk Media News. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.